What's up, you guys? Freshly showered SRS. Look at the hair. It's damp. It's time for the Weekender. Let's go ahead and get into it. You know this show. Non-WWE stuff, but then I give you some WWE scoops towards the end of the show. My God. Let's go ahead. Being the Elite, this is still on the Jericho cruise. So despite the fact that they're on the crew, or they haven't been on the cruise for a little while now, this was the episode. Well, I guess they got off of it a few days before. It just feels like a lot longer. That extra day from Friday to Saturday, me doing this show, it adds. Flip says that Christopher Daniels isn't really Southern California and mentions the fact that Daniels was born in Michigan, makes Daniels question himself. SCU is dressed up as Pulp Fiction on this goddamn ship. I swear to God. This was a rib on me. It's toasty in here. Apologies, guys. I swear there have not been so many Pulp Fiction references in wrestling and wrestling podcasting since our situation. It is a coincidence, but of course there's the great Eddie and Booker situation from years ago, from the WrestleMania promos, but that's it. Helms was dressed as whatever from Coming to America. I think maybe Eddie Murphy. Why is Shane on everything now? We end the Shane Helms podcast last May, and all of a sudden, he's on everything. He's even in Kentucky all the time, and I never know until like the day of. I'm going to get an interview with him. The Bucks dress up as Mario and Luigi, which is funny. It's a callback to the Luigi thing from Nick Jackson. I think that's funny. Marty Skrull, the villain, as Wario. Adam Page as Yoshi and Cody as Bowser. Brandy and one of the Young Bucks' wives or the princesses. Mario jumps on Yoshi's back. So Matt Jackson jumps on Yoshi's back in the match and senton someone. That was funny. I know that Johnny Impact, he didn't seem so entertained by that, honestly. When I talked to Johnny Impact about that, he didn't seem as entertained by that. Flip is drumming for Papa Buck on the ship, and he talks about grabbing those brass rings. He tells the Bucks, I've grabbed him. I did it. I helped your dad out. I bailed him out. They're like, no, we want more. It's so funny. They're playing off the idea that Flip kicking them, that's what gets them going. That's what they like as possible promoters. We see some behind the scenes of last week's Hangman Page action scene. And then they're doing the candy bar bit again, where Scorpio Sky asks Matt Jackson for $100,000, and he's given a candy bar. Someone who is implied to be Triple H chases Cody around. This is cute. I wonder where that'll go. They're starting their own promotion. That's what I'm under the impression is going on. NWA 10 Pounds of Gold. This was a retrospective of NWA 70th anniversary. And with all of the production issues that NWA 70th had, this is what they needed. This is what NWA 70th should have been. It was just a beautiful cinematic look at the event and the main event. And it was a good time. This is the type of production that we've come to know from NWA. Not necessarily minimalist, but you can tell Lagana's doing this. Lightning One is doing this. And that's not what we got at NWA 70th. And that's a shame because it is such a promising entity now that they're able to do this and everybody's willing to work with them. And they have rendered themselves to the point where people want them on their show. Shout out to the big jug. I don't have my cup up here today. It is disappointing that NWA 70th went the way that it did. But I get the feeling next time they're going to hire an experienced crew that's not going to change things on them at last minute. I know that the NWA was very unhappy about that. There was an unprepared audio tech, essentially, from what I understand. Lucha Underground, Ultima Lucha, Cuatro. So the end of this season, you have Phoenix and Dragon Azteca. Phoenix, the newly healed Phoenix, who I think he's such a great baby face everywhere else, and he hasn't burned through all of his goodwill as an independent face or an Impact face or MLW face, but he is everywhere. He gets the first fall with the fire driver over Dragon Azteca. Man, there's this delayed kick that Dragon Azteca does that I just think is beautiful, man. Where Phoenix is seated, but upright. Well, he's just seated. He's on his ass. Azteca floats to the air and throws a single kick. A big spinning DDT wins the second round for Dragon Azteca, and Antonio Cueto comes out and makes it falls count anywhere for three. They throw each other into everything. There is an incredible super body scissors bomb. This is a move that I haven't seen a lot of, but this body scissors bomb, usually off the second rope, is where the opponent is probably on the second rope, usually, or maybe the top rope, it depends. Okay, opponent's on the second rope, you're on the top rope. You jump, turn your body, grab a body scissors, and then slam them into the mat through that. That happened through a table. It was really, really cool. Melissa Santos distracts Dragon Azteca, and he gets speared through the table, essentially. A fire driver gets the win. Rey Fénix, man, that push for him as a heel is working for me. I like it. I like how much different they are in Lucha Underground than everything else, they being he and Pentagon, because I don't need to see them tagging everywhere. And I've made it very clear, and I will again later, Pentagon Jr., not my favorite worker in the world right now. Shaw Guerrero is brought out as Melissa Santos has left the venue, and she is announced as a guest announcer. But Famous B comes out, and he says he's the only guest announcer around here. So what happens? Chavo Guerrero comes out to support his niece, cousin. It's more like his niece, but they are cousins. She and Chavo both beat up Famous B. This is a good spot. And I'm glad Shaw's back into wrestling. Willie Mack and Huertas. So the funny thing is they're both big dudes, kind of. Big for Lucha Underground. But they have such a great clash of styles. There's this weird Samoan drop, a whole lot of slams, some heavy power moves. Mack takes a flatliner on top of his head. It was unbelievable. Stunner. Then he cracks something over Muertes' head and hits another stunner for the win. Muertes' first loss at Ultima Lucha, he's put in a casket, so there are a lot of questions about that. There are a lot of question marks about the end of this show and the next season. And we'll talk a little bit about that as well, because I think we'll have the time. I usually try to let this show go about 40 minutes, since it's just me talking. But, yeah, like, there's still some question marks about Lucha Underground, and I think this may have opened up more questions than anything. Not necessarily this match. Definitely the end of this show, because my God, there were just so many. This is the sacrifice to the gods match. Johnny Mundo against Matanza Cueto, better known as Jeff Cobb. I love this S-grip suplex that Cobb does. For those of you who don't know, the S-grip is like this. Makes an S out of your fingers. It's one of my favorite grips in MMA and wrestling. But what Matanza or Jeff Cobb does is he throws the opponent's arm over his head, reaches around their neck, reaches underneath their leg, brings his hands together, and clasps them, spins around, throws a suplex. I love that suplex. Johnny's stupid-ass glove gets thrown away. I'm not used to this gear from Matanza. I'm just not. But it does, the big stupid glove does play a big role. Johnny catches the wall as he does his parkour spot every single match. He's always got one. Gets chokeslammed through the top of the office. There's this beautiful shot where Matanza is coming down the stairs, and you see the door at the top of the temple, and it opens And Johnny comes through it. And I'm like, whoa, that looks awesome. That looks very cool. Johnny gets that dumb hand and kicks out of Cueto's finish. Punches him several times for the win. I often criticize the leg slapping of Lucha Underground. Or not the leg slapping, but the... You shouldn't let leg slap ever, ever in Lucha Underground because they're adding sound effects anyway. But I love this punch sound effect. Maybe because I had never seen it before. Or never heard it before, rather. This was a good match. Matanz is good. I'd imagine we've seen the last of him. Because they say that they're letting Jeff Cobb out of his deal. Or at least that's what he's under the impression of. Marty the Moth and Pentagon Dark for the title. Marty busted open big time, just to the point where I don't know if it's real or not, but I don't get it. Lucha Underground goes out of their way to be different, and they definitely did. Pentagon gets sent through a table. There's a fork driven into Pentagon's head. He's busted open too. Again, don't know if the blood's real or not at this point. There's the trash can beating where Pentagon is put in a trash can and a stick is taken to it. There's spots sent through the table and a glass plane, then a package pile driver onto chairs that are set up in the ring. It is not a Pentagon driver, as Stryker calls it. And he wins. He becomes a two-time champion. So Reclusa comes out, who you all probably know as Chelsea Green, if you all don't watch Lucha Underground. So she's on their TV right now. Gets ran off. And this will be her last appearance there, essentially. Unless she filmed other stuff that will air then. Because, I mean, they've got stuff that they can use. They've got a ton of dark matches. To be honest with you, if Lucha Underground really wanted to, they could probably piece together a season 5 out of dark matches and filming stuff in front of a friggin' green screen or something. They've got so much dark match footage. She attacks. She's ran off. Vampiro hands over the title to Pentagon. And then kicks him right in the penis. And they fight. However, somebody comes out and attacks Pentagon to save Vampiro. Vampiro reveals that that is his master. So after Pentagon gets his ass whipped, Jake Strong comes out. Big push for Jake Strong. He has just ran through everybody on this show. He gets the tap, tap, taparoo, and Jake Strong, the former Jack Swagger, Jake Hager, is your Lucha Underground champion. Now, this is kind of impressive. I mean, Jack Swagger, a guy that a lot of people considered somewhat of a failure in WWE, is the first ever man to hold the a WWE World Championship and the Lucha Underground Championship. Thus far, among the previous champions, only Johnny Mundo actually held that title or held the Lucha Underground title and was a WWE champion. I mean, not world champion, but held a WWE title. And you have to get to the Gods Championship, which that's always vacated and stuff. So what you can't really count that, but Chavo did it. He had held a title in WWE, and Johnny had also held that title, but so did Jake Strong. So this one season has been so just fruitful for him. I don't believe there are any people who held the the trios titles that ever held titles in WWE besides Mundo. Well, Mysterio. Okay, there's Mysterio too. He's a former WWE champion. And who knows what's going to become of Lucha Underground? Well, why do I say that? Because of this weird, weird finish. You see Aerostar, Azteca, Cuerno. It's revealed Azteca didn't kill anyone's parents. Matanza gets killed with that goddamn fist. Jake Strong shows up, takes the fist, beats up Azteca with it. This is all backstage. Johnny Mundo is talking to Taya. But it's not Taya. She's a god. She's not his wife. She's a god. I'm like, okay. The Bad News Barrett shows up. He's like, anybody have some bad news? And I'm like, ah, come on. He's in the car with the God and with Strong and all that. The most significant part of all this is a medallion is put on Dario Cueto and he is brought back to life. I like Dario Cueto way more than Antonio Cueto. I did not like this season of Lucha Underground. There has never been a season like the first. The first was a great season. Shout out to Brent Vaught in chat right now. Went to Global Wars last night. So that's Lucha Underground, man. Who knows what's going to become of this show, but as of right now, it is unknown. Eric Van Wagenen spoke of this on the Masked Mats and Mayhem show and said, I don't know anything about season 5. This conversations usually happen a month or so after we go off the air. We survive as El Rey survives. That's not a good sign. We need them to be a success. That was not one of his quotes. This is, quote, we need them to be a success and be able to afford to do the show. We reached a tipping point budget-wise. We've gone as low as we can go. I don't know if we could try to replicate the business model of season 4 again. So it becomes a question of, can we do season 5 without it being cheaper and faster and all the other things? Season 5, if we do it, will be a major reboot. Cast-wise, on a lot of levels, we'll be looking to reboot season 5. MGM is still very happy with it, and they want to keep doing it. There are discussions going on at MGM about additional Lucha Libre related programming and IP. I don't think it's going away. I just don't think it's going to sit in this survival mode. Maybe we look at taking on another partner that brings something different. Nobody's saying it's dead. There's just not a huge hustle to get it on the air right now. That's normal. That always happens. Once we're off the air and El Rey starts to miss us, then the talks pick up in earnest, end quote. That is not a promising outlook for Lucha Underground. And I was surprised that season 4 happened. I'm very surprised. But it is what it is, man. Unfortunate. And at this point, there are so many people in Lucha Underground that are ready to move on and are ready to be contractually free. And most of them are. Ring of Honor. Flip and Colt come out. Bully Ray has picked Silas Young to represent him. Stipulation to this match was that Bully Ray gets to pick a wrestler and Flip gets to pick a wrestler. They'll face off. Whoever's wrestler wins gets Bully or Flip the right to do 5 minutes of whatever they want to the other one. And I'm like, whoa. Bully expects Colt to be picked, but he's not. Flip picks the Sandman. The Sandman does his spots, but man, he's so not the Sandman anymore. He does a flip into the goddamn ladder, a senton into the ladder, but Misery gets the win. Man, Sandman was in rough shape here, but he did it. But the story of this is what happened after. This segment was half the show, and it was a good segment, too. And it's a segment that you needed to use a lot of people that you might not have in order to build somebody that you're going to have in Flip Gordon. Bully Ray Kane's Flip Gordon over and over and over. This is poetic in that the Sandman was in this match, and this was the Sandman and Tommy Dreamer. And I was very surprised they didn't have Tommy Dreamer out for this because, my God, he is such an overused cameo. Jesus. And a Dusty Rhodes tribute act at this point. But Bully Ray is just beating Flip Gordon with this cane over and over again. Ray tells Flip to say, I quit. And then he'll just walk away. You see Gresham and Cheeseburger come out. Then SCU comes out. Then the Elite comes out. And Cody gets in the ring, and he just tells Flip to take it. Tells Flip not to walk away. Tells him to take it. And as Bully Ray is about to hit him with the cane one more time, he punches Flip right in the penis. Half the show, man, but it really put over Flip. And Flip does. You see, the thing is, Flip's a real badass, dude. He's trained in MMA. He's beating up people backstage at Step Out of Line. He is a soldier, but he's got this wholesome white meat baby face persona, so to speak. So he had to toughen him up a little bit. I thought this was a good way of doing it. It was a little too reminiscent of the Tommy Dreamer thing, but otherwise I thought it was really, really great. Really good. Must watch, I think. Even the same man match, just to watch it. Karen Klein, Britt Baker, or Karen Q, Kelly Klein and Britt Baker against Jinny Rose, Sumi Sakai, Madison Rayne. Britt Baker does this open hand lockup, and hopefully somebody tells her, usually WWE doesn't like that. They don't like when you lock up and you got your hand straight up like that. And I have a long ass hand. Look at that thing. That's smackage right there. Britt Baker is a house of fire, though. Does the Batista bite and a sling blade, which I really... I like the Batista bite. I don't like the sling blade. I think it's an overused move. Jenny Rose is getting much, much better. Even Madison Rayne looked good, but man, is she tiny. Madison Rayne is so tiny right now that so much of her offense looks like it would hurt her to deliver more than it would hurt the opponent to take. Jenny has a great spear as well. I am really turning the corner on Jenny Rose. She is working very well. And Jenny pins Kelly Klein, who a while back wasn't getting beaten by anybody, but they seem to have fallen out of love with Kelly Klein of late. I mean, she had an unbeaten streak for forever. And you could easily, well, in this match, you could have easily beaten Britt, who's not signed, or Karen Q. So that surprised me a little bit. And meanwhile, Kelly Klein's beating Madison Rayne on Global Wars. But that does surprise me, man. I mean, if you guys remember, and this was in the infancy of the Women of Honor division, Kelly Klein wasn't getting beaten by anybody. And she got beat by Deonna, who ended up leaving, but she was signed. She got beat by Tennille, who was signed, or not signed, but brought in and then got hurt, rather. So, yeah, big shocker. They need to make something out of that on TV. Kenny King versus Cody. So you got to have Kenny King in these big spots if you're giving him the push, but, man, does he softball a lot of stuff. For as talented and athletic as he is, he seems to softball a lot of stuff, like hitting with the belt and kicks. He has this nice Japanese arm drag to a kip-up. Cody gets help from Brandy, who I've often put over as a great part of that act. There is the tangled flatliner from Cody where someone is in the ropes and Cody does the flatliner on them. King does a float-over suplex into mounted punches. From an athletic standpoint, it was a really good performance from Kenny King. His moves needed to be a lot stiffer, though. King throws something at Brandy and tries to Eddie Guerrero Cody, where he tosses the belt, falls down. Refs don't buy it, though. So Kenny pushes a ref down and kicks Cody in the balls. That's a DQ. I fully expect the Elite to leave or to have some loose affiliation with Ring of Honor. But if I'm Ring of Honor, I'm offering to give them the book. Kenny King grabs Brandy by the hair and Lethal interrupts. King hits him with a title, so we're setting up Lethal and Kenny King at some point. Man, Kenny softballs it too much for my liking. Brent Vaught said he was softballing Cheeseburger last night too, first time I noticed it. See, the thing is, you don't want to be too stiff, and you can appreciate that. But at the same time, man, like you gotta connect with the moves. You want to? I'll show you a good example. Total Divas this week. Lana is being trained by Daniel Bryan and Brie Bella on how to work a ladder match, and you see Daniel Bryan take a kick from Lana, and Lana's like, "Oh my God, I'm sorry." And both Brie and Daniel are like, "No. That's perfect. You barely landed on me, but you landed good enough to make it look good." It was... I don't hate to use a Lana example. She's improving all the time. But Kenny King knows better. Impact Wrestling, Killer Cross. He and Moose had good promos backstage. I like that. Killer Cross, I don't think he should ever raise his voice. I don't think he should ever snap on promos. It should be something in the ring that makes him snap. It is the mixture of the original Steve Austin, the Stone Cold, like the ruthless murderer thing, and the Jake the Snake Roberts deal. Cross gets hung up in his match with Johnny Impact, the world title. Does the Del Rio stomp the right way? It's where you're hanging out of the ring with your feet in the ropes, and there's not enough room for you to drop your feet and get out of that. So it makes sense, and you get Del Rio stomped there. The countdown to impact is a cool move, but Johnny always lands on his feet. And I'm like, why didn't you just do a regular elbow drop instead of the sideways flip? Gut wrenches into a gut wrench powerbomb from Cross. I love that set of moves. Cross goes off and chokes impact, but he's late on a Hurricane Rana. Starship Pain completely misses, and Callis is screaming, "He nailed it! He nailed it!" I'm like, no, he didn't, and he doesn't very often. So what are we talking about here? Johnny Impact wins, but that move does not often hit. At that point, I'm coming up with a different finish. Eddie Edwards and Moose, they trade strikes. It's not often you see a guy Moose's size turned inside out on a lariat. I interviewed him this week, and boy, so here's the way it's set up. Impact hits me up and they're like, okay, you got Moose at 340, call him. Okay, I call him. I call Moose at 340. He's like, I'm on the other line with another journalist. Call me back in 5 to 10. Now, Impact also says, you only have 15 minutes, just 15 minutes. And when one person gets behind, everybody gets behind. And nobody has any respect for the system. So I'm like, son of a bitch. And I talked to Moose and he sounded miserable anyway. Sounded miserable. So I was like, all right, whatever. I got a good 5 minutes out of him. Some for making a finisher. Some for an interview I'm going to run today. But man, I could tell he just wasn't in the mood. Whatever was going on with the media wasn't good. And I was like, you know what? I'll get him back on track. I'll end by my time. So if you're a member of the media watching this, stay within your confined time. There's this awesome powerbomb on the ramp from Moose to Edwards. Holy crap. Alicia comes out and yells at Moose. I'm not sure what she adds. She'd be okay as a heel, but man, she's getting a paycheck to scream a lot and wrestle here and there. They want Eddie Edwards to be the new Dreamer so bad, man. I don't know what it is about them trying to create a new Tommy Dreamer when the old Tommy Dreamer is still working every damn week and on everybody's TV. I don't understand it. No jackhammer needed for the win. That's the spear, which Moose did inform me. That's the name of it. It's not called the hit stick as mentioned on Pro Wrestling Wiki. There you go. OGs against Lucha Brothers. I love the spot of Hernandez rocking Phoenix to sleep. Then he powerbombs him. So there's a what's up drop kick that I loved. The Lucha Brothers do that, like they're setting up for the what's up headbutt, but instead they do a drop kick to the balls, right in the penis. And then we see about 8 super kicks. Do I not complain about this in regards to Pentagon all the time? He's such a talented dude. And his super kicks don't look good. They're all right. I mean, they're not terrible. But they're not great. And to me, I'm not doing 8 super kicks unless they look great. But it's just, oh, let's super kick him. Oh, let's super kick him. What are we doing? We're not on the same page. Let's super kick him. Like, man, come on. You got something else. Throw a back elbow. Throw a forearm. Boot him. Headbutt him. Something. There were like 8 in a minute. They do a cool assisted splash. Then Phoenix, or Pentagon rather, inverted infrareds Pentagon onto... I think it was Hernandez for the win. Too many super kicks, but I love their finish. Jordan Grace comes out for her debut. We talked to her this week. I love the callous comparison of Jordan Grace to Rhino. She powers Katarina Waters around, clubbing shots, but Katarina boots Jordan. We get the outside in tornado DDT that takes a while to set up for Katarina. Why the fuck would Katarina pose after this? Her opponent's big debut, a monster, literally compared to Rhino, a mastodon in that ring. And Katarina's posing. Why? Why is this a thing so often in women's wrestling? Cut the shit out, man. She also telegraphs her strike, bear hug submission. I thought there was too much offense for Katarina. She is a character who wrestles, not doesn't need to be in there with somebody who's probably going to be one of the top women. Going back and forth. So Joseph Park is suing Impact with Eli Drake. Park is bringing out the other members of the suit, but gets hit right in the penis. Eli Drake was not happy about Abyss attacking him at Bound for Glory and beats Park down. He wants to end Abyss's career, calls him fat. Eli Drake is great here. Abyss is great here. Or Joseph Park, rather, whatever it is. He's really good. Abyss is awesome. Had him for an interview and an upcoming Making a Finisher. I love the Black Hole Slam. I think nobody does it like him. Eli Drake is unbelievable. I think WWE should have signed him instead of like Gunner. What are you doing? Good stuff. I'm looking forward to it. Scarlet Bordeaux wants KM and Falaba to win more. Harmless. Scarlet Bordeaux. KM and Ba are the comedy relief. They've been splicing in footage from Rockstar Pro. And Cage goes there after Sami Callihan had the imposter. And he beats up a lot of people. This is generic NWO outdoor beating and generic Pillman, Austin stuff. Very generic. Cage is in Ohio and he heals it up, as he should there. Sami Callihan's not getting booed there. OVE attacks. Cage beats them up. But there are like everybody from the Rockstar Pro locker room comes out there and beats on Cage. They overwhelm him, but there was this great spot where he caught a guy in a power slam, then another guy tried to senton him, and he held on to it. And he powerbombed and power slammed both at once. That was so impressive, so cool. Callahan hits him with the belt after everybody overwhelms him. But Cage had beaten up a lot of people backstage. And my God, that is a vat. For the weekend wrestling reviews, non-WWE reviews. I would love to add MLW to this, but once I am able to get it in a more digestible format, I will. I'm going to try something new here. Let me pull this up. The injury report. Let's go ahead and talk about it. I'm going to do a screen share here. Bam! Then I can walk through it with you guys. Let's go ahead and go through this injury report. Roman Reigns announced he was battling leukemia October 22nd. Sidelined indefinitely. Has underwent his treatment. Started to undergo his treatment. Triple H tore his pectoral on November 2nd. Surgery planned. No timetable for his return. Alexa Bliss was pulled from Evolution. Has been sidelined with a concussion since October 20th. Bobby Lashley working through a separated shoulder. Jason Jordan recovering from neck surgery, starting work as a producer. His return is unknown. Fandango tore his left labrum in early July. He is sidelined until late 2018. Double shoulder surgery in June 2018 for Sami Zayn. He's targeting a WrestleMania season return. Kevin Owens also double knee surgery in October of 2018. He's expected to miss 4 to 8 months. Goldust had double knee surgery in July. He's expected to return in 2019, but says the end of his career is nearing. A reminder, you can head over to our resources section at FightfulWrestling.com and get all these at any time. And I cover it weekly on the FightfulSelect.com Weekender podcast. Rowan over on SmackDown tore his right bicep in August. His expected return is spring 2019. Becky Lynch allegedly working through a cracked jaw. Sin Cara had knee surgery on August 14th. He's expected back in the spring. Ty Dillinger sustained a hand injury on October 29th, which will require surgery. Zelina has been off the road due to arm numbness from a WWE Evolution spot. Over in NXT, Eric Bugenhagen has a concussion. Pete Dunne pulled from October 2018 shows due to an undisclosed injury. Riddick Moss tore his Achilles tendon in mid-April, expected return late in the year or early next year, as is Tino Sabatelli, who tore his pec in April. Tegan Knox tore her ACL, MCL, LCL, dislocated her kneecap, and tore both meniscuses in the Mae Young Classic. No timetable for her return. Over in Impact Wrestling, Sanjay Dutt tore his right Achilles tendon. Return unknown, but he works a lot backstage. That is his bread and butter. Rosemary undisclosed knee injury in early February. Out of action until early 2019, looking very much like a torn ACL. Kept her out of action. As it does for Hikuleo, who had an ACL injury on March 3rd over in New Japan. We combine the Ring of Honor New Japan injury report. Taiji Ishimori was said to have had a minor ankle injury on October 31st. However, it should be noted that he was involved in an angle almost immediately following that and used the crutch in which kept him out, in which he used anyway. Hiromu Takahashi landed on his neck and was hospitalized on July 7th. He's back in Japan, will not require surgery. Shibata has that subdural hematoma, his in-ring return unlikely. Tennille Dashwood had shoulder surgery in October 2018. Sidelined until next year, she is also battling a skin condition. Others, Joey Ryan suspects he may have torn his pectoral muscle in early November. Vanessa Craven broke her leg in late October, requires surgery. And Joey Janela sidelined up to a year after September 2018 knee surgery. Here's a reminder. Here's how you get here. You click that wrestling tab or go to FightfulWrestling.com. You click resources. Bam, there you go. Got the injury report for you guys. Beautiful, my friends. Let's also go through the Fightful Wrestling Weekly. Again, this drops every Friday. Our buddies at Pro Wrestling Unlimited also cover this and do a great job. I really like working with them. First off, Dr. Chris Amon, it had been mentioned recently in our contract expiration article that his agreement with WWE was set to expire in October. No terms of anything of a renewal are made, but he was backstage at this week's shows. So it looks like he's around for the time being. WWE Crown Jewel, which seems like it was so long ago, but I wasn't able to put these in the last weekender because the last or weekly because the last weekly happened before Crown Jewel, but the weekender didn't. WWE had set the match order on Thursday, but ended up changing the order of several matches in the first round, and several were trimmed due to time constraints. One thing that didn't change was the Daniel Bryan Performance Center match. It was briefly planned because Bryan wouldn't make the trip to Saudi Arabia. The match segment was originally planned for 15 minutes and was supposed to have an NXT referee in it. It was not a secret within the company that Miz and Dolph Ziggler were going to have to be in the finals of the World Cup tournament. We even reported as much on Fightful Select last weekend when the event started. But it was a closely guarded secret who would win. And I even put in there, for whatever reason, because it seemed unusual they would protect that news or protect that secret if it was Miz or Ziggler. Who cares? But obviously it was Shane McMahon. A few knew of the winner before the segment aired. We were also told of a fortunately minor pyro accident at the Crown Jewel show. Samoa Joe was almost caught by a pyro blast for Brock Lesnar's entrance. Nothing major occurred and could have been a lot worse from the way it was described. Samoa Joe was allegedly coughing up heavily after the incident, but was said to be okay afterwards. He'd go on to wrestle AJ Styles in the next 2 days in house show loops across the UK without any problems. Reached out about to a UFC rep about the rumor that Brock Lesnar wasn't allowed at UFC 230 because the athletic commission feared a brawl would go down. UFC rep vehemently denied it, and UFC didn't expect him there anyway. We will have a lot about independent wrestling standout Britt Baker over the next several issues of the weekly. Spoke to her about 20 minutes. She was very candid. She has to balance her work as a dentist with her work as a pro wrestler, has already incorporated the dentistry into her gimmick. She's Dr. Britt Baker, DMD. Told me she gets Isaac Yankem jokes at least once a show. So if you're bringing one to her, make it original. She's under a one-year dental contract right now. Isn't sure how that would play into her getting a contract for a wrestling company. Hopes to make pro wrestling her primary living while she's young and able-bodied, but admitted that as she ended up signing with WWE, she'd have to make some tough decisions about her work as a dentist. I noticed that she had never wrestled for Impact or TNA, even though they reach out to women of varying experience levels. Deonna had like 8 matches when she worked for them. She said she had actually been contacted at one point to work a set of tapings for a one-night-only show, but it was a time in which she was in dental school and couldn't take off the full week and pull that off. Wasn't something she had the luxury of doing, but left the door open to working for them in the future. She seemed really conflicted on her future, but made it clear that wrestling is a priority as of now and that dentistry would be her career moving forward after that. Jordan Grace talked to Fightful contributor Kristen Ashley recently and opened up about the women's wrestling revolution landscape and how she's navigated it, credited working in Mexico to helping pay her dues and get tougher in a pro wrestling business that especially requires a woman to be in constant protection of herself. Grace wasn't that quick to pick out favorites that she's competed against, but did single out Deonna Purrazzo, Alley Cat, Kylie Rae, Maria Manic, Ethan Page, Skylar, Tessa Blanchard as some of her top opponents, said that some of the most talented people she's wrestled ended up being the least fun because it was not easy to plan out a match. WWE Raw Overrun news. You all may have seen Fightful learned that Monday Night Raw has a hard out time of 11 p.m. Eastern. WWE confirmed this to us later on. The overrun is something WWE has enjoyed for decades and now won't. There's no reason for it besides it being a highly rated period and USA liking that, but you don't need 15 more minutes of Raw. Personally, as a guy who covers wrestling, I'm thrilled. A little bit less. I mean, you got to think that adds up to an extra hour that I get a week or a month, maybe. Those hours are hard to come by when you work 60 to 70 hours covering wrestling and MMA per week. And they don't need it. They had it for the Monday Night Wars when they would go on early, stay late, all that stuff. And they don't need it anymore. That gives WWE additional screen time, but it also allowed them for flexibility if they were going long on segments. So you'll see segments timed out a lot better. I hope it doesn't lead to more strict scripting because, man, that would be rough. Guys, leave us a thumbs up on this video. Even though it's just behind a select paywall, it might help a little bit. But most importantly, let people know that you're watching The Weekender, what we cover on The Weekender, and that you like The Weekender. Tweet about it. I'll retweet it. Your word of mouth really helps us. If there's anything else you want me to talk about, hit me up. We're out.